The enemy scout force consisted of a pair of floating gunnery platforms and an AT-ST escort. Each platform carried half a dozen stormtroopers wearing armor Namir hadn't seen before, stark white and almost invisible against the snow. They weren't skeletons. They were ghosts. And, he suspected, better equipped for the weather than he was.
I want the turret and artillery focused on the platforms first, he said into his link. They'll want us aiming for the walker so they can ride in, offload the troops, and overrun us. Don't give them the chance!
The Echo Base personnel didn't argue. Roja and B crouched in the trench. Namir checked his rifle. The A280 he'd been assigned with his cold weather uniform, the one he'd never used in combat before, and kept his eyes on the horizon. The plan lasted less than 10 seconds after the enemy came into firing range. As ordered, the turret gunners kept their weapon focused on one of the platforms even as the AT-ST charged forward, kicking up snow with its spindly metal legs. The first platform went up in a fireball, its passengers caught in the blast. But the rebel artillery missed the second platform, shots going wide by half a dozen meters. That vehicle's stormtroopers leapt into the snow and dashed toward the outpost. Namir, Roja, and Beek fired at the AT-ST from their separate positions in the trench. Their goal was to distract the machine's pilot, to force the walker to retarget and give the turret a chance at a second shot. The walker was not distracted. It reared and fired on the turret, sending metal and ash and flame spattering across the ice. Namir was certain the three gunners inside died instantly, incinerated by plasma or crushed by the turret's walls. After that, the battle took on two fronts. Namir called out for Roja and Beek to stay in the trench and take aim at the charging stormtroopers. The surviving Echo Base troops stayed on the artillery, trying to lock onto the walker as it picked them off one by one. Namir heard troops scream, saw flashes of red particle bolts, but he held his position, his chest pressed against the packed snow of the trench wall and his head and shoulders peeking above. At any time, he knew the walker might select him as a target. But if the stormtroopers reached the trench, Namir and the others were dead anyway. So he gripped his rapidly overheating rifle in his cold hands, took aim, and fired at each stormtrooper in turn. He shot methodically, if not calmly, acquiring each new target as soon as he saw flames lick the armor of the last. When there were no more stormtroopers in his immediate firing arc, he spared another glance for his surroundings. The artillery stations were in ruins. The walker had unexpectedly crossed the trench and now stood on the south side. Something was attached to its leg, hanging like a piece of debris. Namir thought it was a scrap from the turret until he recognized the broken form of the woman who'd cheered for the transports, the woman who'd alerted Namir to the scouting party. She had one arm wrapped around the machine's ankle joint, her hand trapped in the gears. Her legs weren't moving, but somehow, she was still alive. Her head was up, and Namir thought he saw her smile as she raised a grenade in her free hand. He wanted to call out to her as she disappeared in the fiery bloom and the walker plummeted forward, but he didn't know her name. He turned back to the north side of the trench. He saw the handful of stormtroopers still alive, cut down by Beek and Roja, the former still in the trench, the latter picking his way among the bodies on the ice. The second artillery platform had disappeared, presumably withdrawn back toward the AT-AT's path. The withdrawal didn't surprise Namir. Outpost Delta had lost its turret and most of its crew. It was no longer a threat to the invasion of Hoth.